listening to a podcast from The National.
The 2018 World Cup enters the business end on Friday as the eight remaining nations battle to keep their dreams alive. As the tournament takes a short and deserved break, we look ahead to the quarterfinals and predict which teams will reach the final four. This is the Extra Time Podcast. My name is John Turner. Joining me today, Steve Luckings. Steve, how's it going?
It's going good, mate. It's going good.
You managed to catch your breath.
Just about. Voice is slowly coming back to me.
Exactly. Good stuff. Well, short break. I mean, a good chance to take stock a little bit and obviously look ahead. The tournament as a whole has been fantastic, dramatic.
Couldn't agree more.
Let's just quickly reflect on the last of the quarterfinals, because it was a really historic match, an occasion for England. They finally won a World Cup penalty shootout.
Finally done it. After the heartache of 1990, 2006. Am I missing any? No, I think that's enough. A couple in the Euros as well. But I mean, it was just fantastic. And England were by far the more deserving team to go through to the last eight. I thought they were fantastic. Obviously had the wind knocked out of their sails by the 93rd minute equalising goal. But, you know, they dug deep. They hung in there. And, I mean, to win a penalty shootout is just so euphoric. Now I know how, you know, teams like Germany feel to do it to us all the time. But yeah, what a great performance by the team. There were so many standouts for me. It was a great game of football, and it was really nice to enjoy England winning a knockout game of football.
Well, now looking ahead to their quarterfinal, they've got to now do something again that they haven't achieved before, and that's beat Sweden in tournament football.
I know.
Now, Sweden haven't set the world alight at the World Cup, but they've not done anything wrong either. I mean, they've come through a tricky-looking group.
Yeah.
What looked like a 50-50 match against Switzerland. It wasn't the best game of football, but they're through. I mean, this isn't by any means a gimme for England, is it?
No, definitely not. You know, if there's one thing that Sweden are based on, it's, you know, a kind of stingy defence and a hard-working team all over the pitch. I was going to say, I think they lack goals, but, I mean, I guess they've scored in pretty much every game so far, haven't they? Just not really coming through the main sources of goals that you would expect from someone like Marcus Berg, who is so prolific for our lane. But I think it's, 13 shots now at this World Cup and zero goals. I would think if Sweden want to go any further in the competition, you know, their strikers are going to have to get on the score sheet at some point. But yeah, it was a very dogged. It was an ugly win over Switzerland. It was an ugly game, to be honest. And I was really disappointed in Switzerland's response to going a goal down. Never really looked like they were, you know, throwing caution to the wind to try and get back in the game. But yeah, I mean, Sweden are there completely on merit. Like you said, they come through a very tough group to top it. Really, I have it in my head they finished second, but they didn't. They topped it, didn't they, with the win over Mexico in the last game. And yeah, it will be a tough test for England, but I mean, the way they're going now, you know, they're Sweden are no better than Colombia were. So I think, you know, I think England fans have a right to think that Gareth Southgate can take this team all the way to the final.
Fair enough. And you mentioned about how Sweden might struggle to consistently create chances. And particularly if you look at that back three that England have now, I know that particularly one member of that back three you've been ranting and raving about for much of the tournament. And it's funny how it's kind of shifted, because only a few years ago it looked like centre-half looked like England's weak point, with all due respect, for guys like Phil Jagielka, Gary Cahill. It wasn't quite the Rio Ferdinand, Sol Campbell,
sure,
John Terry era. But now with Kyle Walker, John Stones and one of your favourite humans on earth, Harry Maguire. That's as formidable as it gets.
Definitely.
At this World Cup.
I'm sure you're bored of hearing me saying it. Maguire has been the most unplayable player at this World Cup. The amount of headers he wins in both areas is phenomenal. He's such a potent attacking weapon. Really comfortable on the ball. And you know, every ball that Colombia launched, he was the first one to get his head on it. He was always the one looking to go and attack the ball. Love him as a player. I think he's been fantastic. And I think another thing that Gareth Southgate needs enormous credit for is the foresight to realise that between Kieran Trippier, who I think has had one of the most outstanding tournaments of any English player at any tournament, but realising the talents of Kieran Trippier and Kyle Walker, both right-backs, both competing for the same berth, Trippier is so much more comfortable on the ball, delivers, you know, how many chances has he created so far? Yeah. Whereas Kyle Walker's strengths are very much in anticipation, speed of recovery. I mean, there's not many people on the earth that are going to beat him over 50 or 60 yards. And it's just a much better fit, I think, playing him there. It seems obvious now that Southgate's done it, but I think it works really well. And the more you can get Trippier on the ball, I mean, he's the best passer in that team. I don't think that's an exaggeration by any stretch. All of England's good play came down his channel, and as it did in the first two games that he played as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with us becoming a set piece team, especially when you've got the delivery of Trippier and the heading ability of Maguire.
And is that where you think Southgate and England should be approaching the Sweden game in terms of trying to get that ball down the right-hand side, get deliveries into the box, both in open play and from set-piece situations? Is that how the best way England can unlock Sweden? Because as you said, also they're very mean at the back as well.
Yeah, definitely. But I think you've got to play to your strengths, haven't you? You know, and it's interesting in the build-up. You know, before we even knew that they were going to meet in the quarterfinals, that Sweden players were a little bit defensive, more through English media attacks on their style of play rather than the players. But, you know, Sweden play the way they play. It doesn't matter if it's against Brazil or Panama. They're going to set up how they set up. Two banks of four, very rigid, very few gaps to exploit. But as I said, when you've got a guy who can deliver all types of balls, whether it's into the area with speed, with precision, whatever, Trippier needs to get on the ball as much as possible. And the one great thing about the England-Colombia game, just to come back to that, was the way that Harry Kane, I feel like England finally got it. I feel like they finally got the way to play football, you know, by putting his body in the way of would-be tacklers, be prepared to take the tumble, draw as many fouls as possible. Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that. And the more chances we get to deliver balls into the box to Maguire, I think they're going to lead to loads more chances. There's definitely a route to goal through England through that method.
What about on the other side? What do you see that Sweden can exploit in England to give them the best chance of getting through to the semis?
Well, in terms of exploiting, I mean,
is left back an area?
Yeah, I think
Young
so.
You can target.
Do you not think? I think Danny Rose needs to come in. My problem with Ashley Young is as good as he is as well at delivering, you know, balls into the box, his first instinct is always to go back towards his centre back.
Yeah,
and he's just done it so often. Like, I've not seen him take any players on. You know, I know he's one of the more experienced players in Southgate's squad, but I think Danny Rose coming on against Colombia really allowed England to get a foothold back in the game. Like I said, they had the stuffing knocked out of them by the late goal. Rose came on, we looked a much more balanced side, really regained the initiative, I think. And that's a change I'd make. In terms of how Sweden can get England, I mean, I think, well, I know your thoughts on it, but I think there's a real argument now about whether Sterling, maybe even Dele Alli, keeps his place. So will that mean Southgate going for a two at the base of midfield, Henderson and Dyer? Who knows? But I think there's definitely three positions there that are up for grabs, I'd say.
Yeah, okay. But either way, you fancy in England to get through this.
Mate,
yeah.
I told you yesterday, I know you were very nervous about it. You know, you've been bitten once and twice. But I always thought England would beat Colombia. And once you get that game out of the way, I think there's a route to the final.
I just thought it all hinged on the fitness of James Rodriguez.
Yes, you did.
As soon as he wasn't even in the squad, then my mood perked up a bit.
You did light it up after you saw that, yeah.
let's move on to the other quarterfinal on that side of the draw. Host Russia.
The best side, eh?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Host Russia take on Croatia. Now, it's been some tournament for Russia. They are certainly they've certainly defied expectations, haven't they?
I think across the board, we all had them in our predictions to be the biggest disappointment. Or did you go for...
No, for England.
Right, so we're all wrong so far.
But, I mean, even the most optimistic of Russian football fans would not have pegged them getting this far, particularly getting past the mighty Spain, who had a very ordinary tournament. But fair enough to Russia. They're up against Croatia, who, aside from their... not very good performance against Denmark, have been one of the standout sides of the tournament.
But again, I think looking back, I mean, you look at that Argentina team, it was bang, bang average Argentina team. France absolutely destroyed them as well. So I don't really think that can be used as a kind of base to measure them as potential winners. If we're talking about potential winners, I think it's easier to look at the teams who aren't going to win. As much as anything. And I think after you've scrubbed everyone out...
Process of elimination.
Well, yeah, you've got France, Brazil and Belgium, I think, who are going to win it. But certainly Croatia, like you said, in the Denmark game, they were all over Denmark in the first half. It was a shame we got both the goals in the first 4 minutes because it was just tedium after that. But Denmark made one change. They brought on an extra midfielder, Lonesson, and they pushed their fullbacks on. And Zlatko Dalic took until, just minutes, he was in extra time, I think, to react to it, to adapt to what, that extra body being outnumbered in midfield. Rakitic and Modric, who, I don't think it's outrageous to say they should, if they aren't, they're very close to being the best centre midfield pairing anywhere in world football. But they just retreated, they couldn't get on the ball. And do you know what I mean? It just seems like Dalic didn't look at his bench quickly enough and think, what can I do to do this? Mandzukic has been too isolated, whereas in the first half, he had Perisic and Rebic around him, buzzing around him, feeding off of him. And to me, he was just a little bit slow to react. And I wonder if Croatia have been found out.
Well, you think there's a bit of tactical awareness or unawareness from Dalic there? Is that something that you think could cost them against Russia or even beyond then? Is that something that's concerning?
Well, I think in terms of them going all the way to it, because not to be unkind, but as good as Denmark are, they were never going to be a team who were going to go and win the World Cup. So if he was slow to react or he didn't know how to react, then I think when he comes up against a kind of boisterous Russia team who are probably playing for penalties now, aren't they? Yeah. So I just wonder if he feels that if it's not going according to plan, whether he can change it around to try different ideas. I could well be wrong. As I say, Russia have done superb to get here, and it's always great to keep the host nation in the tournament as much as possible for the local interest in terms of helping out visiting fans and stuff like that. It just all helps with the atmosphere. But, I think Croatia should have too much for them. But I don't think they're quite the dark horses that most other people see them as.
Do you think Russia have got enough about them, though? Have they proved throughout this tournament that they could actually beat Croatia? Because before the tournament, they were a shambles. They hadn't won a competitive game in a few years, and no one gave them a chance. But I mean, now once you're in the quarterfinals of the World Cup, you've knocked out Spain, albeit on penalties.
Yeah.
I mean, it means they can do the same to Croatia.
Yeah,
man for man, Croatia aren't a patch on Spain.
No. You raise a fine point. I tell you what I'm struggling with is the idea that the Russian coach doesn't want to play his best player, which is undoubtedly Denis Cheryshev.
Yeah.
Scored two cracking goals in the 5-0 win over Saudi, was again great in the game against Egypt, and I thought when he came on against Spain he turned Russia's fortunes around. They were actually able to get some time on the ball, not much time obviously because Spain were intent on passing the ball to death, but it worries me that he doesn't see him as a starter when I don't know about you, for me he is absolutely head and shoulders above the rest of that Russia team.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
So, it's interesting how they'll set up. I mean, obviously, they've got, home support, raucous crowds. The Russian fans, you know, speaking to John McCauley and listening to other journalists out there saying, you know, the Russian people could not be any friendlier. And I'm glad that whole, you know, the threat before the tournament of hooliganism doesn't seem to have reared its head in you know, any way, certainly not any reports that I've been reading. So, yeah, it's going to be great, but I suspect that Russia have probably reached their peak at this tournament.
I will be rooting for them, though, because there's nothing I enjoy more than when cameras pan to, like, fan zones and yeah. there's, like, the home crowd or the home support are all cheering, which, of course, when they beat Spain was absolutely incredible. Yes. I messaged John afterwards and asked him if he was enjoying the celebrations in Moscow, and he said he couldn't because he was on a 25-hour train to the Sweden game, so he couldn't even enjoy them. Right, over to the other half of the draw, Steve, and where the eventual winners probably lie, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's coming from this side.
Yeah,
isn't it?
So let's start with Belgium Brazil. Is that the matchup of this quarterfinal based on what we've seen of the two teams so far of this tournament?
Yeah, undoubtedly. You know, Brazil look like they're hitting their straps. For me, you know, I know we discussed this after the Japan game. For me now, Belgium have shown me they've got most of the elements you're going to need to win any tournament, which is a prolific goal scorer in Romelu Lukaku, quality all over the team in Eden Hazard and you know, Kompany Vertonghen.
De Bruyne,
you know, across the park, Thibaut Courtois, got a world-class goalkeeper. They've got resilience and character, as they showed, to come from 2-0 down to win 3-2. And they look like they've got a bit of luck on their side as well. I mean, Vertonghen's goal, the header back.
Like a headed version of Ronaldinho.
But I mean, he couldn't do that again in another million tries, could he? So that is why I've swung towards Belgium now. I think now they've got all the elements. If you're thinking, you know, with the exception of Portugal winning Euro 2012 by drawing, what, 5 games, I think you're going to need to realistically expect to win 5 or 6 games to win a 7-game World Cup. And certainly Belgium and Brazil are both capable of doing that, but I just feel like Belgium are more capable of doing it. They've shown me now that they've got what it takes to take that final step.
Roberto Martinez said after the game, and looking ahead to Brazil, that Brazil, everyone expects Brazil to win. But they don't, do they? I mean, that's clearly an underdog mentality that he's obviously trying to kind of adopt, but it's
not fooling anyone, is it? Well, Belgium above them in the FIFA rankings?
I'm not sure, actually. I didn't check. No, not sure.
Is it 22 games unbeaten now? Might be wrong. Might be 23 now. Belgium, you know, I'm sure that's very much for the cameras and playing to the stalls, as it were. I'm sure he's telling all the players, you know, man for man, you're a match for these guys. It will obviously be concerning that Neymar looks like he's got his match fitness where he needs to be. He was, you know, the key player in their win over Mexico to reach the quarterfinals. Just wish he'd dialed down the old histrionics and theatrics.
Most people do, don't they? I think it is he the difference, because he is a top bracket player. Probably more so than any of the other guys that would be on the pitch that day. Could he be, if he's on fire that day, focused, maybe dives just a couple times less? Like, do you think he could be the guy
doesn't look like he's being electrocuted when someone steps on his foot?
Exactly. Yeah. But beyond all that, he is probably the third best player in the world, and he could then be the difference between two pretty evenly matched teams.
I wouldn't dispute any of that, what you just said, but what I think, you know, the thing that Tite, the manager, has been really keen to instill in this squad is that they're no longer reliant on just one player. They're no longer reliant on just Neymar. Yeah, the captaincy is handed around the players game after game. But I think the focus on Neymar, and rightly so, because as you say, he's one of the top 2-3 players on the planet, is that it's really allowing Coutinho to really flourish as a kind of, you know, free roaming midfielder as well. So I actually think, by way of drawing the attention, Coutinho has actually become the key man for Brazil. So I think if, you know, Belgium are going to have to keep an eye on the pair of them, no doubt. Yeah, you know, and not just them, up front as well. And, you know, Willian is a constant menace, you know, and Diego Costa, Douglas Costa, sorry. So there's always pace out wide as well in them wide attacking positions. But yeah, for me, Coutinho may have just moved ahead of Neymar in terms of importance.
It's funny how it was only 4 years ago when it was Neymar on his own, surrounded by what looked like a rather ordinary team.
Yeah.
But now he's pushing forward and guys like Gabriel Jesus as the starting centre forward. Now, I'm a massive fan of Gabriel Jesus. I think he's a quality player, and he will go on.
He was in the fantasy football team straight away.
Of course, yeah. And he'll go on to be one of the best players in the world. But do you think there's an argument that Firmino might be able to should take his place?
Yeah, I do actually. Not just because the goals haven't been coming for Jesus at this tournament. Just for me, you know, we all kind of rave about the season that Mohamed Salah had at Liverpool, and rightly so. Obviously, it was phenomenal, and Sadio Mane's pace. But for me, the one who makes it work is Firmino. Yeah, he's the first line of defence. The way he tracks back, defenders absolutely bounce off him. You know, he's got the look of a kind of cruiserweight boxer now. His speed is so underrated as well. The way he caught up with Neymar to get on the end of the deflected shot for Brazil's second. I think there's very much a case for him to be the focal point of that attack. And you know, maybe Tite will spring a surprise and go with the pair of them up front. But yeah, his involvement, I think, now needs to be a little bit more than 10 minutes off the bench at the end.
But you think Belgium will win this?
I do. I do think Belgium will win.
Okay.
When you've got match winners like Nasser Chadli, you've always got a chance.
And then the last of the quarterfinals, Steve. Another one that looks like it could be an extremely tight contest, France against Uruguay. Now, most people seem to be leaning towards France on this one. Not me.
You're not, though, are you?
I thought Uruguay were going to have too much for Portugal. And again, much like James's involvement against England, I thought would sway it one way or the other. Same thing for Edinson Cavani. I think he came off injured against Portugal. If he's fit and can take his place alongside Luis Suarez.
Quite a fitting scene of Ronaldo helping him off the pitch.
Get up quick, hurry up.
Yeah.
If he's fit and can take his place next to Luis Suarez, I think that'll be the difference. But, I mean, France showed against Argentina again. But I think against Argentina, 4-3 was flattering to Argentina.
Absolutely.
So they still conceded three times against a shambles of a team. So as brilliant as Mbappe was, there's still some serious issues there with France.
Yeah, definitely. But I think we've all been waiting for them to catch fire, haven't we? And I wonder if that's the game where it did. You know, I've been saying since the first game that I just think they look a better attacking unit with Giroud at the head and Griezmann just off and you know, Dembele and Mbappe, whichever ones are playing, kind of to the wings of Giroud. But yeah, it will worry them that they've conceded three goals against, like you say, a bang average Argentina team. There's no way of dressing up. But although one of those was a worldie from Angel Di Maria. Interestingly enough, my two favourite goals at this World Cup have been scored by right backs, which was Pavard for the one against Argentina and Nacho for Spain against Portugal.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
So, love that kind of cut across in off the post goal. But, France, yeah, they need to keep up the form they showed against Argentina if they're going to have any chance. The one thing you would say about Uruguay is they've got, in the most important positions that you need, i.e. centre-backs and centre-forwards, they've got four world-class players. And as you've mentioned many times, if you've got kind of good enough players that fill in the other positions, you've always got a chance. But as you rightly say, Cavani's fitness is going to sway your opinion one way or another, isn't it?
Yeah.
If he is fit, how do you see it going? Can you see Uruguay going through?
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah.
I think that the way that Suarez and Cavani played together up front is just magic.
They were superb against...
Yeah.
Portugal. Portugal, of course,
because they both do everything for each other. One will drop deep, one will draw fouls, run the channels, score goals, assist the other. I mean, they're just menaces. So as you said, as long as you've got a support cast that can get the ball up to them, which is exactly what they did against Portugal, then I can't see why they can't deal with France as well. They don't concede any goals either.
No. And Martin Caceres, who still can't figure out if he's a left back or a right back.
Yeah.
Like, his throw-ins, they're weapons as well.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't concede goals. They're compact at the back. They're never going to be caught up high like Argentina were against Mbappe. I mean, that was just laughable. Great to watch.
Yeah. you would think if any defence left in the tournament has the personnel and the players to deal with an attack containing Mbappe, it is Uruguay.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, it'll be close, and most of my predictions for this tournament have been wildly wrong, but yeah, I've just got a feeling for Uruguay. If France do it, of course, I wouldn't be surprised. They're still an absolutely quality team, and against Argentina, they should have stuck them away 6 or 7-1. But yeah, I've got a feeling for Uruguay.
Okay, we shall see.
What about you?
No, I just think France had... I think they've clicked into gear. I think they're going through to the semis.
Interesting. So right, let's to recap. Who's your semi-final lineup then? That's England and Croatia on one side.
Yes, England, Croatia up against France and Belgium.
Interesting.
Yourself?
England, Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's keep the host flag flying high, shall we? And Uruguay, Brazil.
Wow, okay.
So we only have one team that's the same.
We do.
One of them's going to be really wrong, aren't they? All right, Steve, well, thanks very much for your time this week, imparting all your knowledge on the World Cup. Let's see who's right and who's wrong with these predictions.
We'll do, mate.
Thanks a lot. Well, that's all the time we have for this show. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts and at thenational.ae/sport. Thanks for listening.